You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That was a cool interview.
That was fun. You just said John something. We were just discussing within the G-Chat, though, that Charlie Ward better or greater than Lamar Jackson. That which
was
jarring to me. I feel like Lamar Jackson is so underrated. And I'm not saying that you're underrating him. I didn't see Charlie Ward. So you saw both. So I'm not saying that to you. It was just kind of funny to me that a guy like Charlie Ward now obviously would have a lot better chance of being able to be successful in the NFL, but we still have people who are trying to tell Lamar Jackson that he should be a wide receiver.
Well, look, I brought up in the interview the fact that he is African-American, and I don't think teams were entirely comfortable with having their team led by a black player. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. It's 25 years ago, and I'm not saying it was the 50s, but that was a reality. Randall Cunningham was really the only, and Doug Williams were the only guys really that had successfully crossed that barrier. And I think there's part of that, but I don't want to paint it just with that brush, because part of it was what John was talking about, in that Charlie was open about letting the NBA draft process play out, and he was a first-round NBA draft pick. I think it's obvious that you're going into football. You don't know what the length of your career is going to be. He ended up playing, I'd have to check. He had an 11-year NBA career. To have a successful 11-year NFL career as a quarterback, you got to be pretty damn good.
You got to be an all-time.
Not quite.
11 successful years?
To be a starting quarterback in the NFL for 11 years, you got to be really good.
You
don't have to be an all-timer, but you got to be really good. And I just think, you know, he knew how good a basketball player he was, and played for the Knicks for 10 years, and, you know, got a couple of other contracts after that. And look, I don't think he's got any misgivings about it. I think he knows he could. I mean, I haven't spoken to him, but I'd like to read this book. Again, The Athlete by John Finkel. You can catch it on Amazon or www.johnfinkel.com. You can find it there for more details. But the reality is, I think you can – he could probably guess that he knows he could have played in the NFL and ultimately was just opted to go to the NBA, and he had a long, successful career there. I'm just telling you that you look at his senior year stats, which I tweeted over to you or G-chatted over to you, his senior year. He played in 13 games, and I guarantee he was not playing the entirety of those games because they were murdering everybody. He threw 264 for 380. That's a 69.5% completion percentage. Over 3,000 yards, 27 touchdowns, 4 picks. He ran the ball 65 times for 339 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's actually not a lot. That's not a lot of rushing attempts. So he wasn't a guy that tucked the ball and ran all the time. The year prior to that, which is the only other year he started, he ran the ball 100 times in a similar amount of passing attempts. So they dialed it back a little bit, and he didn't need to run as much. And that was a really good team. That was a fun year. I mean, I was in college, and BC was really good, and I got swept up in that. But that Notre Dame-Florida State game was one for the ages. Florida State lost it, but BC bailed them out by beating Notre Dame the next week. You know, that was the time before the BCS, so the polls are what mattered. And we knocked Notre Dame out of the number one spot, and Florida State went in there.
Bastards.
They played Nebraska in the bowl, and that was that. That was I can't remember. Did Nebraska miss a field goal at the end, or Florida State made a field goal at the end to win that with like seconds left. So anyway, yeah, Charlie Ward better than Lamar Jackson. And I'm not disparaging Lamar Jackson. I think it is a little nuts that people are trying to make him a wide receiver, but I'm not a huge fan of his NFL prospects, just me personally. It doesn't mean that I don't think he should be a quarterback, but There's other guys I would like more than him. I mean, he's just – he isn't a pocket passer. That's what it comes down to for me. Doesn't mean that he can't throw from the pocket ever. He's just not a strict pocket passer. And when it comes to guys playing Big 12 style, I know he's an ACC player, but all over the place running, throwing, scrambling constantly, that's not a way to build an NFL team long term, because that guy is going to get hurt.
If it's the injury concerns, because especially the way his physical build is – I'm okay with that, but the thing is right now, first of all, Tom Brady is going to be the last quarterback that enters the NFL and is able to have that much success with having that little athleticism. Like, we are going to continue to grow and grow and grow as athletes. I just don't understand what he is. A special, special athlete. And where everybody's so willing to big up Josh Allen, not saying that you are specifically, but they're touting athleticism and a huge arm. I'll say it right now. The athleticism is not close, and Lamar Jackson has a stronger arm than Josh Allen. I've seen him throw the ball like 90 yards. That's not like an exaggeration. That exists. He was in high school. I understand that he's run
200 times this year. He ran it 260 last year. He's running the ball as in fact, last year he had more rushing attempts than he did completions.
He's a special runner.
Concerning to me. I know. So in college, it's great. In pros, it's not going to work out. It just doesn't work out.
That amount of running,
the only one that did it with some regularity, and he got hurt all the time.
But Mike Vick, again, was as special of a player as we had. I understand injury concerns, but at the end of the day, like, injury concerns exist for all players, regardless of
Aaron
that.
And Aaron Rodgers got hurt, and he doesn't run around like crazy. Yeah, I get it. I get it, but
projecting that this guy's going to be hurt all the time feels like, again, but we're trying to pigeonhole him at wide receiver. Like, you're going to have him running a ton then if you get to throw him. Like, won't be as often, right? But, he's still going to get
hit.
Your
investment. I understand, but we're trying to do, and what the NFL teams are trying to do, is project what that could look like. And they don't have the benefit of knowing what will happen. So they're just trying to use whatever data is available to them, past players, projections on when this guy could conceivably get hurt. And when you're building a franchise around that guy and you don't feel like it is a safe investment, and let's be honest, I'll be critical of the NFL teams. They sometimes do play it too safe. But at the same time, I'd understand why you wouldn't want to build your team around that guy when there are other guys that might be better pocket passers. Now, Lamar's got 3 months to prove people wrong, right? Well, let me see. Where are we? Yeah, 2.5 months to prove people wrong. So we'll see what happens. I don't think he's going to be just a wide receiver. I think somebody will take a shot on him at QB, but I don't know. I'm not. I can't say that with a ton of confidence. And we're going to have Emory Hunt on here at 10:40, I believe. Let me just double check my schedule. 10:40. Yeah, he'll talk. He loves Lamar Jackson.
So good.
You guys can
good
have
man.
Lamar Jackson love fest and talk about his prospects in the NFL. So, but yeah, I know what you're saying. But Charlie Ward was a fantastic quarterback, and yeah, they both have Heisman trophies now and they're part of the same fraternity, but Charlie Ward was a little bit I would just call him a better college quarterback. It doesn't
but that's interesting, because college quarterback, Lamar, the rushing then matters.
Let me back that up. I shouldn't have said college. I shouldn't have qualified it that way. I think he would have been a better NFL quarterback, but Lamar's stats are going to blow him away. You can't compare it statistically. Mm-hmm. The game is kind of different in that way. Lamar Jackson played a lot more wide open, and Louisville's offense is a lot more wide open than Florida State's. Like, Charlie wouldn't have had the ability to do that. Plus, like I said, they were really murdering teams.
He wasn't
in
playing often.
Yeah, he wasn't. He's definitely not playing all the fourth quarters of those games. I mean, they did beat, in 13 games, they beat 7 ranked teams, and they destroyed all of them. Thankfully, BC wasn't in the ACC yet, so we didn't have to play them. But we beat the team that beat them. So,
to be fair, Lamar,
by associative property, we were the best team.
That's true. But to be fair, Lamar, I remember the open. You remember the open to his Heisman
run? The head
coach
of the BC team? Hang on, I got to ask you a trivia question, because you're young. You're half my age. Do you know who the coach of the BC team was then?
I do not.
Tom Coughlin.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
When I was a student at BC, Tom Coughlin was the head coach at Boston College, and the quarterbacks were Glenn Foley, and we had a lot of NFL players that he recruited to BC and ultimately spit out into the NFL. A lot of guys. Coughlin had a good eye for talent, and he developed the hell out of those guys. We had a lot of guys that I graduated college with that went to the pros for short periods of time, for long periods of time, and the like. The Hasselbecks came in right after that, both brothers. They played there, so he kind of built basically – I'm doing a BC history lesson, but he had this Flutie success, then it fell off, then Coughlin came in, fixed it. He was only there 3 years, and he was off to Jacksonville, but it, it you know, kind of set the set BC, turned BC back forward a few years after he got there. In any event,
were you you know, rooting for Coughlin throughout the NFL run that he had?
Coughlin. Yeah, I did not know
that about Coughlin.
He's probably. I mean, he might be my favorite coach of all time, even though I'm not a Giants fan. He was just tremendous, and I like rooting for him. And, yeah, he's a hard ass and all that kind of stuff, and he was not relatable to players at one point. But I think he proved over the course of his career what he could do. What he did with that BC team in 1993 is amazing because – my first year there, I was a freshman. The team went 4-7, and 2 years later, they beat the number one Notre Dame team. They were as good as any team in the country. They were as good as Florida State. They were as good as Notre Dame. They could have beaten them both, and they did beat Notre Dame. So, and that's saying a lot because I just heaped a ton of praise on Florida State. So, in any event, so there you go. This was going to be a segment about the Olympics in which we brought Pete in. So we do have a few minutes left, so let's talk about this topic. Pete Considori, our esteemed producer and lifelong hockey fan. He plays hockey. I don't know how well and what position he plays. Well, why don't you give us your hockey background? You started hockey late in life, right, Pete?
Yeah, very late in life. I decided to start playing.
Well, very late in your life.
In my life.
Still a young
right,
man.
Right.
70-year-old Pete picks up the puck.
Yeah, exactly. I started my senior year of college. I had gone ice skating with my girlfriend, and it kind of came naturally to me. I mean, I wasn't great, but I didn't fall once or anything like that. So I was like, you know, I like hockey. Let me give this a shot. Went and bought a cheap pair of skates, and every Friday after classes, I'd go to the rink and kind of teach myself. And now I'm in
elite. You're a natural.
I'm a defenseman. I'm the captain of my hockey team. So yeah, it's been a fun couple of years. Well, more than a few years.
And you're a suffering Rangers fan, right?
Yeah. Fire sale city for the Rangers right now.
Yeah, and so your thoughts, really, on the it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch all those players go. The NHL trade deadline is the wackiest of all of them. I think people sometimes undersell it because there's so much focus on the NBA trade deadline. Mm-hmm. This year, you actually had a couple of big NFL deals, which is rare. And the MLB trade deadline this year is pretty good, too. You had a lot of players moving both before and after the trade deadline. But the NHL trade deadline is later in their season, and it's just a fire sale. When these teams know that they're fighting for the eighth seed and what's the point, or they're out of it, they just unleash holy hell on their roster, and the Rangers are going to be one of those teams.
Yeah, so the Rangers are looking to move three players that kind of come to mind right now, Michael Grabner, Rick Nash, and even Ryan McDonagh, our captain. We're trying to be younger. We're trying to get faster. I don't blame the Rangers to see what they have in their young talent. They've brought up Pionk. They've brought up Gilmore. They've brought up D'Angelo, who was a once Coyote player that we got for Derek Stepan and Antti Raanta in that trade in the offseason. So hopefully if we move Nash, we get a good piece for him. If we move Grabner, McDonagh, we get good pieces for them. The interesting thing about Michael Grabner and Rick Nash is that they are free agents after this year, so potentially they could re-sign with the Rangers if they want to come back and if the deal is right.
Okay, so Kevin, you wanted to ask him about the NHL players in the Olympics.
Well, that's the thing, because I was talking to Pete about this last week, and basically I didn't even realize this, honestly. I'm not a huge hockey fan. I've admitted that plenty of times. But the NHL used to have to take two-week breaks during the Winter Olympics. That way the NHL players could go over and play in the Olympics. So, Pete, I'm just curious how much of Olympics hockey have you watched this year? If you're not watching, is it because the NHL players are not there? Is there a drop-off? Do you feel like the NHL players are they upset about this? Like, how is this impacting hockey on the Olympic stage and the NHL stage?
Well, I think on the NHL stage, having the NHL players stay is a good thing. If you look at, like you said, taking those 2 to 3 week breaks off of the NHL for already a, how do you put it, a lower watching market, I guess, a lower viewership for the NHL than the NFL or NBA or MLB, I think it's a good business decision on Gary Bettman's side. I would like to see the players go play for their country because every player wants to represent their country, but I actually kind of think that the Olympics should stay in kind of the amateur kind of circuit. You know, at one point, professionals who were getting paid, they weren't allowed to play. Like, when I watch the NBA, the basketball part of the Olympics, and I see LeBron, it's just always like, all right, USA is going to win. You really don't see anyone else going, oh, they're a contender to beat the U.S. It's always USA or bust. I mean, that's just the way it's always is. And I'm a USA fan, obviously, because I live in the United States. However, it doesn't really give the Olympics that sort of competition. It's kind of like, all right, well, let's watch the USA run over everyone, and then that's it. And I feel like the NHL, it kind of does that. It's always USA, Canada, or Russia is a huge powerhouse when it comes to hockey. So I kind of like having the Olympics have the quote-unquote amateurs who don't get paid play instead of the NHL players. I feel bad for the players who do want to go play for their countries. Alexander Ovechkin was a huge person to say, yeah, I really want to go play. You know, I don't care if I get fined, whatever. He's still playing the NHL right now. He didn't go to play for the Olympic athletes of Russia. However, you know, good for the NHL. They didn't have to take weeks off. The Stanley Cup doesn't have to end at the end of June now. So overall, I like seeing non-NHL players in the Olympics. It does kind of make the Olympics bad for the USA and Canada, so to speak, because you don't have those NHL players in there, though.
And there's a few college hockey players that are on this U.S. roster right now, right? So they've had to take breaks?
Yeah, so they've taken a break from their club, and they're over playing the Olympics. I don't know if the college hockey continues, though, and they kind of replace them for the time being. I can't see them doing it, though.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll talk more about this after the break. It's Mike, Kevin, and Pete on Fantasy Sports Today.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product. Apparently, this is the headbanging segment.
That opening scream.
Fantasy Sports
no
Today.
Joke.
That's
I think it's
jarring.
A wrestling theme song. I believe that's Absolution. Pete, can you confirm?
It's Paige's entry music.
Yep. That's the Absolution's her new group. You watch wrestling at all?
I don't know any. I don't, and I know what you guys are talking about. Bands or. I thought you were talking about a band, but apparently it was a wrestler.
Yes.
So, I don't watch it because I'm an adult. So
those are some shots fired. I'm gonna get Greg Sussman on you.
Too many of my friends on this network watch wrestling, and it's okay that you guys watch it. I'm just not into it. Maybe my son will get into it at some point, and I think Tony Cincata, my longtime friend and host on this network, I think he went to a wrestling event last night with his son. So
awesome.
If Tony's listening, shout out to Tony. He's coming up at 12 o'clock with Joe Galina on the Weekend Fantasy Update. And just if you guys want to reach out to us today, yell at me about Lamar Jackson or talk about Charlie Ward and how good he was or any of the other stuff we talked about, feel free. At FNTSY Radio, I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. Give us a call at 84-FNTSY. One thing before we continue our Olympic discussion. Did you know that it only takes 1 minute to potentially save someone's life? No, seriously, just 1 minute. That's how long it takes to swab your cheeks and join the donor list with DKMS. There are currently over 900,000 registered donors in the U.S., and we actually need more. There's an American diagnosed every 3 minutes with blood cancer, and there can never be enough donors. For only $45, you can help DKMS register new bone marrow donors. DKMS donors save approximately 19 lives every day. We want you to help save just one. So please, if you can, go to DKMS.org/FNTSY today. We'll tweet that out and make sure you get the information there. So they're a partner of ours, and hopefully we're continuing to be successful in driving awareness towards their cause. So we got cut off by the break, but you know, got to pay the bills and all that kind of stuff. So Pete, we were talking about the college players. They must have taken a break there somewhere. It's Jordan Greenway from BU. Mm-hmm. You got Troy Terry from University of Denver. You got Ryan Donato from Harvard. His dad's the head coach there. So a few guys had to take a break. I would imagine, you know, it's kind of a tough deal there to take a break in the middle of the season. But at the same time, you know, this is before their playoff system and everything else. So I guess it's good to give them an opportunity at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'm not too sure if they do the break or not. I can't see them not taking the break. I don't, you know, college doesn't have a minor league system where they're just calling up people. So mm-hmm. I'm assuming they're taking the break for the Winter Olympics. And it's a good thing that we have those college kids, right? Because, I mean, look at Charlie McAvoy. If Charlie McAvoy was in the running for the Olympics, you have an NHL player pretty much right then and there before he starts his career if he was a couple years younger, you know? So we're definitely still getting an abundance of talent in the Olympics, but just not as, you know, not an influx of it as you would if NHL stars were able to go and represent their countries.
Pete, do you think that this could become a thing, though, where maybe we start to, like, rally around these teams again? Because, like, I watched The Miracle on Ice, like, the movie mm-hmm. a ton of times, and, like, that clearly that team had something very special about them, and I think there are times, and not to say that the NHL players, you know, they weren't winning gold because they didn't care enough. I don't want to at all give off that opinion, but I think when you give guys who were never expecting this opportunity, like, I'm sure that these kids thought that it was always going to be the NHL players, you now give them this opportunity to represent their country, and it's a very rare opportunity for them, because then when they go on to become NHL players, they won't have it. Do you think that it could maybe create something special?
I absolutely think so. I think if, like you said it and you put it nicely, if you give the opportunity to these kids that won't have, they make it to the league, you definitely kind of light a fire in their belly a little bit, and you want to play harder. They want to show what they can do, that, you know, even though I'm not in the NHL, I could play really good hockey and beat the hockey superpowers like Canada, Russia. This year it's the Olympic athletes from Russia. But I agree with you. I think this is something special. It's always something special to go to the Olympics, right? I mean, if you get selected to the Olympics, I can't imagine the feeling you have to be able to represent your country and play the sport you love in the same kind of time. Especially to win a medal too, there is even more special. So, like I said, I feel bad that the athletes alone can't go for their countries, but I think it's a great opportunity for the youth of hockey and you know, junior players and college players to be able to go on a world stage and show how good they are.
By the way, you made an important delineation there, calling them the Olympic athletes from Russia. I know I've probably been stating a misnomer calling them Russia, but look, it's all kind of a farce, right? Russia cheated. The most systematic doping cheating scandal in the history of the Olympics that we're aware of. And they were banned from the Olympics, but they've let 163 athletes from Russia, I believe, compete, because there's no proof that athlete specifically doped themselves and cheated on this test. So that's why I'm sure many of you are aware. But that Olympic hockey team is ridiculous. Pavel Datsyuk and Ilya Kovalchuk, and these are guys that are, their NHL days are behind them, but they're still nasty. Like, they,
absolutely.
You know, they got nasty players all over the roster.
Absolutely. Even the guys that weren't in the NHL, you go over to the KHL for Russia, there's an abundance, and I mean abundance, of talent. You can make the argument that in Russia, hockey is probably the most popular sport. This is where the problem comes in with having the NHL not allowing these players to play, is because you actually have professional athletes from Russia who mm-hmm. are at the top of their game, right, in the KHL, like Datsyuk and Kovalchuk, who were the best in the NHL and now the best in Russia. So now you have to bring amateurs to compete against them So that's why I think maybe there should be kind of a overall standard through all of the Olympics that, look, if you're getting paid to play and you're at the in the top league of your country, either you don't compete or the NHL has to stand back and go, okay, we need to let our NHL players go, even if that means shutting down the league for a couple of weeks. So there's a back and forth that I struggle with. Like I said, I would love to see NHL players go for their own sake, because if I was an NHL player and the USA said, we want you to play, and Bettman says, nope, you're not going to be able to, I'd be pissed. You know, I'm not going to lie. But I understand, too, that you should really give the amateurs a chance, and that's what the Olympics were about, too. So,
and Russia also has an advantage, and I think they were at the bottom of the standings before today, too, but they also have an advantage because 15 of their players, I mean, first of all the players play in the KHL, and 15 of their players are from the same team, right? SKA St. Petersburg. So there's sort of, I mean, and seven of the guys are from CSKA Moscow, or 8 of those guys. So they have a lot of familiarity with each
Absolutely.
Other. They have a built-in advantage. But
so they're cheating again.
I think we'd be remiss in saying that the huge advantage, or the huge decision was made because John Tavares, who was one of the NHL's biggest stars, he was the third leading scorer when he got injured at the 2014 Olympics in Sochi. He tore his MCL, mm-hmm. and he was done for the year. And I think basically right when that happened, you knew they were doomed for 2018 at least, if not forever. But I think that injury, as well as a couple of others along the way, sunk this opportunity for pros to continue to be a part of it, or pro NHL players to be a part of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, think about it. The NHL, like any other sports league, is a business, right? If you have one of your star players go down in something even as special as the Olympics, now your product suffers. Now you don't have your top, one of the leading goal scorers of the league, one of the top player of the New York Islanders, one of the bigger New York markets, go down in the Olympics, and now he's out for the rest of the season. So I agree. I think that the injuries is also a reason why Bettman went, okay, no, you're not going this year. I mean, who knows? In 4 years, maybe he changes his mind and says, all right, go, or the Players Association, the NHLPA, say, no, you got to let the players go. It's unfair. That might change. But I agree. If your product suffers because of the injury, the business decision is what he made was correct. Is it a moral decision? Was it morally correct? That's for you to decide, obviously. But yeah, injuries, I think, play a huge part.
See, now I'm starting to think that there's a conspiracy where perhaps it was a faked injury because the Canada was going to be able to fight through it because they have so much talent, but then they knew that the Americans would really struggle. So I'm calling foul play.
Wow.
What?
That was out of left field.
This is the thing.
It doesn't even make any sense.
Here's the thing, Mike. You have to understand this.
Conspiracy theory didn't make sense.
That's the point of a conspiracy. When we used to talk hockey, you have to present
a legitimate argument, like how they didn't land on the moon. You have fake evidence. Or
is Gary Bettman Canadian or American?
That's a good question.
He's Canadian.
See? Okay. Yeah. So JT went over there, right? So if he fakes the injury, then he's going to, right? So they're like, oh, it's a huge NHL problem. Boom. No NHL players can go. Canada's fine.
Also,
they have
not
so
Canadian.
Many.
Not Canadian. From Queens, which is where I'm from. I should have known that.
You just said it was Canadian. So now.
I know. I just made it up. I just took a shot.
Now I'm throwing a fellow Queens guy under the bus. I don't want to throw Queens people under the bus.
You can't go back. He just kind of went.
How many lockouts is that guy going to go through before he loses his job?
Well, that's the other issue. It's a good question.
But no, but here's the thing, Mike. This is what we used to do on the producers. All the hockey segments, I would just throw out crazy theories at Pete and Chris, and then they would either decide to humor me or they just kind of quietly move on to an actual subject of conversation within the hockey world. You have to humor me at least
it.
A little bit. Mike.
I'll try, but I literally didn't understand the words that were coming out of your mouth. I will say we do have a real topic coming up in the next segment. It's going to be Emory Hunt. He's a college football expert. He's going to be joining us to talk about, you know, draft prospects and maybe if we have any signing day questions, lingering signing day questions, we can do that. But we'll talk a little bit. We'll get into the Lamar Jackson stuff in the next segment because he is a fan, and Kevin is a fan. And I'm not saying I'm not, but I think Emory would have him squarely in the first round And I just have some misgivings about that. So we're going to talk to him next. We're going to talk NFL at the top of the hour because the QB shuffle continues. Kevin and I have been talking a lot about it off air because, you know, I don't know that there's that many available spots for somebody like Lamar Jackson to, say, get a starting gig next year.
So, Mike, can I give you some tell you something that you probably won't be super pleased with, but it'll actually be good to get your feedback on this. So I did my first I do a lot of mock drafts because I just love the process, and I like filling them out. It helps me get familiar with prospects and things of that nature. So I just did my first one, and for the Steelers, actually gave them Lamar Jackson. I'll explain to you why, and then just you can tell
what
me whether
round?
First round. Here's so
they're not going to do that.
I only went
the
first round.
Process.
So yeah, I mean for me it just comes down to I don't think that they can realistically trust like Big Ben to be there long term just because. Last year at the end of the season, he was like, yeah, I'm going to retire. Then in the middle of the season was like, maybe I should retire. So I don't know if you can really be like confident that Big Ben is going to be the quarterback for the Steelers for however long you would normally think a guy in his position would be. The reason why I thought that Lamar Jackson would just perhaps make sense for this team and the organization, and I just they had Mike Vick there. So I think that they've seen someone with this skill set before. Now, obviously, Vic there was not meant to be their future quarterback, their franchise quarterback. He was just a backup. He played a little bit because Big Ben had got hurt. But I thought that perhaps a team who was familiar with a skill set because they had Vic might be more inclined to take a chance on a guy like Lamar Jackson. Because I will say this, right now I know that he is not projected by most to go within the first round. I do think that the combine process is going to help him a lot. I think as he continues to show off his athleticism, he is going to shoot up. And I do really think that the Steelers would be wise to, if there's a guy they value, because, I mean, if they don't end up valuing a guy like Lamar Jackson, then it would make no sense. But if there's a guy that they value at that 28 pick, or even if they felt it was necessary or valuable enough to trade up for a guy, that it would make sense because, again, I don't know how confident they can feel moving forward without a backup plan behind Big Ben.
I understand, and I get the theory, and it all makes sense. But first round is going to be too early because it's going to be dependent on what happens with Bell. Let's say they figure out a way to pay Bell, and he sticks around. Mm. They're working on right now. So they need to shore up the holes right now. And that's not a hole right now. Mm. You can count on Ben for this year, maybe next year, but you got to work on a hole right now, whether it's D-line or D-back or now conceivably replacing Ryan Shazier. You need to shore that hole up right now, and that's not a first-round pick of a quarterback. Do I think they should go with a quarterback in the draft? Yes, but here's the problem. They just drafted Josh Dobbs. They have a developmental guy. Are they going to add another developmental guy? Landry Jones obviously isn't a quarterback of the future. He's held the offense together in a couple of instances when Ben got hurt in the past. He's not a guy they can win the Super Bowl with, but you know we saw backups win the Super Bowl this year. But do I think that could be a landing spot for Lamar Jackson? Maybe, but. I think it's fair to figure out what the Steelers are going to do moving forward. But why did they draft Josh Dobbs where they drafted him? And how are they going to develop him into the next project? That's what I would have to consider, and the Steelers will have to consider. So I understand that, but that first-round pick can't be a quarterback for them, not right now. It would be irresponsible for them to do that right now. But I appreciate the thought process because they do have to figure out a plan. There's other teams out there that have to figure out a plan. What are the Jaguars going to do? They got a guy that they don't love who's got an injured wrist, and there's no plan after that. They draft a quarterback in the first round? You know, there's a lot of questions to be asked. We'll ask Emery Hunt some of these next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. Give us a minute. We'll come back to talk to Emery.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. We're going to get Emery Hunt on here in a minute. Once we get connected to him, so we'll be there in a moment. In any event, we were talking about football stuff and the QB shuffle. And you and I have talked about it a bunch, kind of off air, trying to figure out what we can do and how we can ultimately figure out who's going to go where.
Right.
And here's the teams without the QBs right now. Bills, Broncos, Browns, Cardinals, Jets, and let me get my last one. My computer's freezing up on me. Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the teams really without a QB. We got effectively four guys we think are going to be first rounders,
mm-hmm.
and we got Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
That's five guys. Do you think all of them are going to start next year? I don't know.
No.
You got somebody like AJ McCarron's now on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So, first, give me your thoughts on Cousins. I know you think – I said Vikings last week. I think I'm trying to convince you there. There's been some reports that maybe the Vikings don't want him, but I think there's some money there.
The problem is
they do have to pay some people after right. this season.
It actually worked for me. I thought it was funny. When you said Vikings last week, I was a little – Because I just felt so strongly that they were going to continue to pursue the Bridgewater-Keenum package, but I've just thought more and more about it, and it makes so much sense for Cousins. And really, I honestly have boiled it down more so now to the Browns and the Vikings. I know Gary Davenport last week was saying that it doesn't really make much sense for the Browns to pursue him, and I understood all of his reasons. I still feel, though, the Browns are going to have the ability to offer just the best contract to Cousins, and I felt like it could become a situation for him where is the winning situation in Minnesota that much greater than perhaps the contract offered by the Browns. Ultimately, if you look at that Vikings team, this is how I feel about it. What Case Keenum gave this team last year, that feels like Cousins' floor to me. Like, that feels like the minimum that you're going to get. And that led to 13-3 in an NFC Championship appearance and being, you know, one game away from the Super Bowl. And there's a very young core there. The offense is very talented. I think that's the thing about the Vikings is they are, you know, the past two seasons, their success is so predicated on their defense. However, last year, the offense was better. But if you now get a guy that you can trust in Kirk Cousins to come in, pair him with Diggs, Rudolph, Thielen, a healthy Dalvin Cook, that becomes a team that can win games in a ton of ways. That was, I think, something that was very special about this Eagles team this year, is they could win games with their defense, they could win games with their offense, and if the Vikings are able to add Cousins, then they would have that type of team. That's why I just think that it makes a lot of sense for Cousins, really, to choose Minnesota over the other teams that would be in play.
Of course, you couldn't resist bringing up the Eagles and winning a Super Bowl championship,
because
you're an Eagles fan. So, anyway, we have Emery Hunt here, my friend who's done shows with and is a regular guest here on this program. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. He's a CEO and founder and analyst at Football Game Plan. He calls games. He does analysis here on Sundays on the Football Lineup Lock Show. So, first of all, Emery, thanks for joining me, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So, look, we're going to talk about these quarterbacks for the next 2.5 months and beyond, but I did think that Jimmy Garoppolo thing started to put things into motion for me as I started to try to figure out where guys would land. And I think, personally, while Kirk Cousins will get his money, the market will be a little bit softer on him than people suspect, simply because I think there's enough available rookie quarterbacks that you can get at a much bigger bargain than Kirk Cousins that can conceivably lead a team moving forward. For example, the Browns. Why not just develop your own guy at a much cheaper price than plugging in a $30 million quarterback to maybe get you to the playoffs? That's just sort of my thought process. But what I want to ask you, how many of these rookies do you think will step in and start right away? I know you're not going to know where they're going, but you got Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Baker, Lamar Jackson, and possibly more. Who do you think can step in and start right away, or who do you expect to?
That's a great question, because you look at teams that need quarterbacks. Let's say starting at number two, the Giants need a quarterback. Jets could use one.
Yeah.
You can make a strong case for San Francisco. You can make a strong case for Minnesota. I heard you guys talking earlier about Minnesota, but Jacksonville needs one. So I think there's probably room for one to start right away. And that'll probably be with the Jets. So if I had to choose, I would say a guy like Lamar Jackson, because of his athleticism and what he can do from the pocket. I think how he plays within the pocket is vastly underrated. He's better throwing in the pocket than he is outside the pocket. But I think he gives someone the best chance to win right away, because he can do things that a lot of these other quarterbacks in this draft class can't. But I only think there's one spot that really can use a guy that can start stepping right away. And if you're looking at a veteran spot, Denver, I think, is the ideal spot for a veteran. I don't think they'll go rookie. I don't think they'll go rookie high. So I think they may be the veteran spot, while the Jets may be the rookie spot.
Emery, my man, with the Lamar Jackson love. Let me ask you, because people are all over the place on Lamar Jackson, and I think you're getting a lot of people who are all over the place with Josh Allen as well. There's a lot of people, there are some people who think he's the number one quarterback. There are some people who think that he's a guarantee bust. When you look at these two quarterbacks, who do you have higher, and what is it that you're able to separate between the two?
Lamar Jackson grayed out extremely high for me. He's the one that graded out. I use number grade, so he graded out with a 90. The next best quarterback, which I have Sam Darnold, graded out with 79.5. So that's how far in ahead Lamar Jackson graded out on film. Josh Allen is my seventh graded quarterback, and I think when people look at Josh Allen, I think they're just responding to the hype that's out there with him coming from the media. But when you break down this game, he's not a terrible football player. He's just madly inconsistent. He's a stronger arm version of Josh McCown. So are you going to take a guy like Josh McCown? Let's say Josh McCown at his best. Would you take the best version of Josh McCown in the first round? I think the answer would be no. So I think that's where I have to find where you would rather Josh Allen go in the draft. And also, I think he's the type of guy that you have to keep on a pitch count. You know, you don't want him throwing the ball any more than 22 to 25 times a game, because that's when it's going to become an adventure.
He sounds like the more athletic Blake Bortles to me. But you made an important distinction there that I think a lot of people in the mainstream media, right, the guys that work at, you know, the ESPNs, the Bleacher Report, they're continuing to put Josh Allen very high. I think a lot of that has to do with what they're hearing back from NFL teams, because the NFL is enamored by a guy that just looks like Josh Allen, and they're probably a lot more skeptical on a guy that looks like Lamar Jackson. But you said it there, the huge gap that you have for Lamar between the rest of these guys. But what is the one thing perhaps that worries you about a Lamar Jackson? Because, I mean, he comes out of 90, so if he's not 100, that means there's always things to improve on. So is there a specific thing? Mike mentioned the potential for injury, which I think is a fair criticism. Is there something for you that you say, if he fixes this, that 90 goes to 100?
I think for him, it's just throwing well on the move outside the pocket. I think that's where his growth can happen, because outside the pocket, the accuracy runs hot and cold. But inside the pocket, he has time to set his feet, square up his base, and deliver an accurate shot anywhere on the field. So he's complete from everywhere else except throwing on the move. I know that's contrary to popular belief, but when you watch him, everybody automatically thinks he just takes off and runs. But this guy is a polished passer, and is coming out of a pro-style offensive attack with Bobby Petrino. And I think when you see him throw on a move, everything, his mechanics gets out of whack, as most quarterbacks that throw on a move tend to do. But because he is such an athletic guy. He plays a fast game, and when you throw on the move, you have to really take your time to square up your fundamentals and get an accurate ball off. Because he's so explosive, it's tough for him to do that. But if he can improve there, I think that can push him up to 100. You know, but right now, that's why I have him graded, because he's the only quarterback, to be honest, that strikes fear in the heart of a defender, a defensive coordinator, because you can't guard the quarterback that makes it an 11-on-11 game. It throws everything off from a numbers perspective.
Look, I think if he can prove that he can be a strictly pocket passer or predominantly pocket passer, I think he's going to win people over through this process. I think he is the guy that through this process has the most to gain. Josh Allen has sort of been thrown into this hype machine, and he completes 56% of his passes. That concerns me. I tend to think, just my own feeling, that Sam Darnold is going to win out through all of this. Do you agree with it? He ends up being the first guy taken.
Well, you know, it's a layered discussion because...
Yeah, I agree. It is.
You talked about a little bit earlier how the NFL likes a certain type of quarterback.
Yeah.
They like a certain quarterback's look. And that's why you have a Blake Bortles going well before a Teddy Bridgewater. You know, that's why you have a Mitch Trubisky going well ahead of a Deshaun Watson and a Pat Mahomes. So, yes, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield may all go before Lamar Jackson, simply based off how they look, which is unfortunate because if it's about taking the best player, then Jackson should be – I find it funny because people go above and beyond talking about Michael Vick, and they have NFL Network special top 10 Vick plays, and everything is Michael Vick, Michael Vick, and Michael Vick went first overall. And here you have a more polished version of Vick.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't talk about him. And so, I mean, when Vic came out of Virginia Tech, he was mediocre at best at throwing the ball.
Totally inaccurate passer. An inaccurate passer.
Just ran a 4-2 and helped lead his team through a championship game. But I think with Sam Darnold, and let's look at how these guys perform in big games. Lamar Jackson made Florida State look like Toledo. And Florida State had numerous draft picks, first-round draft picks and second-round picks on that defense. Sam Darnold played a big game against Penn State as a freshman, but then didn't do anything else after that on a big game stage. Josh Rosen, I don't know why people are glossing over his inability or ineffectiveness in big games. And Baker Mayfield has been up and down, had a big win over Ohio State, didn't do well in the playoffs the last 2 years. So I don't understand the hype. And Josh Allen, we already know how terrible he has performed in big game situations throughout the course of his career.
I'm out on Big 12 quarterbacks, just for the record. I don't want to draft one in the first round. Baker, Mason Rudolph, you guys can keep them. That's just where I'd be if I was a fan of a team. By the way, Kevin, you said that Josh Allen is a more athletic Blake Bortles. I can bash Blake Bortles seven ways from Sunday. He's really athletic.
Yeah, no, I gotta give him Josh Allen's for that. Not to say that Blake Bortles isn't athletic. I think Josh Allen's probably more athletic. I think that they're...
That would be tough. I mean, I know he's got a lot of tricks in his bag.
Okay,
but
here's the thing. If Blake Bortles is more athletic than Josh Allen, then what are we doing? Because this guy's going to go in the top 10.
Why did Blake Bortles go in the top 10?
I don't know.
Right.
Well, I do know.
That's what Emery's here to answer. Am I right, Emery? Am I right in saying that if there's one thing you can't bash Bortles about is his athleticism?
Right, because remember, Bortles coming out of high school is getting recruited as a tight end. So And Josh Allen, when you watch him run, I mean, Josh Allen has some escapability. He's a strong guy. He breaks some tackles. I think both guys are fairly athletic. I'd be interested to see who's the fastest. So I want to see what Josh Allen runs in the 40-yard dash. But, I mean, as far as all sports is concerned, that's the difference where Allen literally has the technical arm that can go end zone to end zone.
Emery, besides these quarterbacks, right, because they're going to get – all of the hype. Who are some of these other guys that you're looking at the top of the draft that you're saying, no matter the spot, this guy is going to succeed? Who is kind of your guy other than, you know, these quarterbacks?
I would say Rashad Penny out of San Diego State.
Mm.
When you watch him run the football, and I know you guys probably remember how Willis McGahee looked at Miami pre-injury, right?
Yeah.
There's something smooth and easy about Penny's game, and the fact that he stepped into that role after Danelle Pumphrey went on to the NFL and ran for over 2,000 yards. You can't even name the quarterback or the receivers on San Diego State team, which tells you that people knew this guy was getting the football, and all you had to do was stop Penny, and you stop San Diego State, and no one was able to do that all season long. And I think the way he is able to pick and slide his way through a lane and then accelerate through it and then outrun angles and outrun the secondary, that's the home run hitter you want. I think an ideal spot for him would be Seattle. They need a bell cow back. You need someone that can really flip field position and hit the home run. I think that's the type of player that can succeed anywhere, but I would selfishly want him to go to Seattle.
So we're here with Emory Hunt. He's on Twitter at FBallGamePlan, CEO and founder and analyst at Football Game Plan. One more question from Kevin, and then we're going to get out of here.
Emory, then let me just ask you on that note, because this running back class is being praised as deeper than last year's class, and we know how good that class was. So if I can get a guy Penny late, if I can get Ronald Jones late, Josh Adams late, is Saquon Barkley, when it's all said and done, going to get overdrafted regardless of how good he is, just because of how much value you can find in the later rounds with these running backs this year?
See, people have to stop thinking like that in terms of, oh, I could pass on Barkley because I can get a guy like, you know, Rashad Penny late, because you can't game the draft. That thought process would work if you knew who everyone was going to pick. Let's say if you're the Browns, right, and you want to pass on Barkley and try to get a Sony Michel later. What if you pass on Barkley and then in the middle part of the first round, five running backs go? Something weird happens before you get the second pick. But so I've always been of the mindset that you take the best players when you can. And if you have a chance to take the best running back, take him. So if you're the Browns, you have a chance to take the best running back. Even though Penny is great, Michelle is great, Walton is great, Ronald Jones is great, all those guys are great backs. But if you have the chance to take the best one out the bunch, taken, because you don't know who's going to trade up, who's going to take what by the next time you pick.
Yeah, well, that's how you lose 16 games. Yeah, that's how you lose 16 games in one season. So, good stuff from Emory Hunt, as always. I promise next time we will avoid talking about the quarterbacks. We did get to another position finally, but you can find Emory on FBall on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Good stuff from him, as always. Emory, thanks. We'll talk to you again soon. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be back on the network after this.